Okay, guys, so this panel is called Grill the Committee. Some of us take that name very, very seriously, apparently. So I guess this committee is prepared to grill back, I think. So the committee in reference, of course, is the Standards Committee, the ISO Standards Committee. And everybody up here has been on it at least a little bit. Quite a bit in some cases, right? What I'd like to do is to kind of kick off is to let you introduce yourselves, talk about how you got involved with the committee, if there's one or two particular things you're very you want to mention. And the one thing I would kick out is if you were, what's your personal agenda? If you have your way, what will or will not be in what will or will not be in C++ 17? However, the stipulation is you got to keep it under 2 or 3 minutes. So, are you ready to kick that off, Herb?
I'm Herb Sutter. I've been on the committee since 1997. I was the secretary for a few years, and I've been the convener or chair of it for about 10 years now. And I have a personal agenda, and I do have my own papers, but I don't get to be as fully a participant because I'm supposed to be neutral as a job of convener, at least when it comes to having the full committee vote. So at this point, I will not exercise the ability to be a participant and be partisan. Mike, however, can have an opinion.
So thank you, Herb. My name is Michael Wong. I've been on the committee, I don't really remember, maybe 10, 11, 12 years now. I've done a few C++ 11 features, and now I'm working on transactional memory. I mostly participate in concurrency. I am supposed to be a national body, but that rule is changing. What would I want in C++ 17? I like everything that we have so far. I don't have anything that's particularly negative, so you might be disappointed in what I have to say. What I don't want to see, that's going to be a tough one. Can I think about this?
Hello, my name's John Lakos. I work at Bloomberg. And the reason I got involved with the Standards Committee is it's kind of interesting. When I joined Bloomberg, I realized that we had a problem with memory allocation, and I needed to do something. And so my choices were either not use the standard library or modify the standard library so that we could use allocators. And neither one of them was a good idea, and I lost a lot of years off my life trying to figure out what to do. So what I did is I got a general implementation of the standard library, and I modified it. And then people at my company said, "Why are you screwing with the standard?" I said, "Well, it's either I don't know what to do because I need this, we need it, what are we going to do?" So finally I got the idea, why don't we go visit the Standards Committee, talk to them about it. And then, so there was a little merry band of four of us that went off to Mont-Tremblant and waltzed in the first day that Howard Hinnant was the Library Working Group Chair, and he was very gracious and he listened to what we had to say. And at the time, there really wasn't any problem with allocators. They were fine. And so they said, "Thank you very much for coming. We'd love to help you out. Which way did you come in?" And we left. And a couple of years later, I joined the committee. And apparently, that's another way to screw with the standard. And so I think it was 2008. Finally, after a little bit of rough stuff, the scoped allocator model that Pablo will talk about in detail if you'd like, was adopted. The model I'm talking about, however, is something that I came up with in 1997, and it looks like it's on track for 2017, which is only 20 years late. And that's really why I'm on the committee. That is the reason why I'm on the committee. And there are a couple of other things that I've pushed through having to do with value semantics. And there's a couple other things I'd like to push through. Don't know if it'll succeed, but allocators is why I'm here.
I'm Nevin Lieber. I work at DRW. I started in 2010. way back in 2007, I met Beeman Dawes at the first BoozCon, and he said, hey, there's a committee meeting coming up close to you in 3 years. And I wasn't smart enough to think, I have a job, I could just fly somewhere. So I waited 3 years, and I went to the Fermi meeting, and talked to my company, said we should join, and said, okay. Then I said, the next meeting's in Madrid, and I'd like to go. And it's like, well, we're coming back in international travel, but you should be there. And that meeting, I came back, and I said, we should sponsor a meeting. That had to go to our partners, but last fall, we got to sponsor the meeting in Chicago. What do I want in the standard? Not just my paper. I want void tea. It's really cool. What don't I want? STR stream. We need a replacement. Otherwise, I got to throw a party when it, you know, turns 21 and can drink for being deprecated.
My name is Pablo Halpern. I work for Intel. I started on the committee, I think it was 2007. John drafted me. And then I drafted papers. And so I wrote the wording for allocator traits and scoped allocators, and the proposal that is still making its way through the process for polymorphic allocators, which is the allocators that John invented. Right now, I work mostly on parallelism stuff, so I'm in the parallelism working group. And so if I could choose what to be in 2017, it would be parallelism, especially fork-join parallelism. And I would like to see it be part of the language, but it may, its first incarnation might be as a library addition to the standard. If there's something I would not want to be in the next standard, well, I would love it if we could just get rid of exceptions entirely. But that might be controversial.
Hello, everybody. My name is Walter Brown. I've been a member, a participant in the standardization process since 2000. At the time, I was employed at Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory. You heard Nevin refer to the meeting we hosted in 2010. I was the host for that. Thank you. It was the second last meeting before C++ 11 came out. And an awful lot of stuff got done at that meeting, and I have to admit I'm pretty proud of having hosted it. Most of you are probably aware of the things that I've managed to sneak into the standard. Most of them are standard library contributions. I've done a few things in the core language part. I was fairly involved at a high level with what turned into alias templates, which originated from a paper that Herb wrote, in which he did a beautiful analysis of what this could look like, and he came up with two possibilities. We couldn't do both. And he recommended one. I couldn't live with it. So I gave a presentation, which I wrote overnight, and that turned into a paper later. And I convinced Herb and the rest of the committee, and we got alias templates as we know them now. That happened about a decade ago, I think, give or take. I also proposed what I then called object templates, but I couldn't convince the committee. That happened, again, about a decade ago, give or take a few years. And I resurrected it about a year ago. At the same time, independently, somebody else made a near identical proposal to the committee in the same mailing. So we had two papers and one mailing on the same subject. We got variable templates. They're now part of C++ 14. We got them in under the wire. Those are the sorts of things that I care very deeply about because I've had a long-term agenda since the late 1990s. I've been interested, well, I should mention very briefly a couple of the library things that I've done so far that you might recognize. One of the early things I did was get CBegin and CEnd as members. I was responsible for, we snuck it in with Chrono. We got the ratio header, which I first implemented, I think, in 1997 or 98. We got common type. I'm not the only one who came up with that. That's been around a long time, but I'm one of the people involved. Those sorts of things. In C++ 14, most recently, you may have noticed that type traits has grown some aliases named underscore T, so you don't have to say type name anymore and colon colon type. That's my, oh, thank you. So I do a lot of programming. I'm officially now retired, and I'm considered an emeritus member of the committee, but they still listen to me, and I'm still interested. I have a long-term vision that I've had since before I joined. The reason that I got into the committee is because my employer, Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory, obviously a scientific-oriented institution, we recognized we had huge science coming up, and the scientific community, including the engineering community and the mathematical community and so forth, historically has been dramatically underrepresented. But we are huge consumers. C++ is the de facto lingua franca for the high energy physics community. And we're a fairly important community in the computing world, because it's our community that came up with the World Wide Web, for example, right? So we do a lot of interesting stuff, but our needs didn't really have a voice at the committee level, and that's why my employer at the time got involved. We recommended it, they approved it, and we've been participating ever since, and I've just kept going because I'm really into C++. I've been doing C++ for over 30 years now, and I picked it because it matches the way I think about programming. It matches the way I think. My long-term goal is a units library.
Walter,
I wrote one.
I'm sure
I wrote one in 1998.
Jump directly to Swaperator, and then let's wind it up.
Okay. No, I'm not going to mention Swaperator.
Okay, as long as one of us does, that's all
that matters. That got turned down. I wasn't there, but it got turned down anyway. So I need one more feature in the core language, and then I can do the units library right. But the interesting thing was, back in 1999, there was an accident. Something crashed on Mars that should have gone into orbit. Because of a units mismatch, one group of software did metric, one group of software people did English units. They didn't talk to each other. Oops. That should never happen again. But we need to do it right. I need one more core language feature, then I can do the library right. So that's my long-term goal. Thanks for your attention. Sorry for running long.
You didn't mention random and all that.
Yeah. I did the random header. And I did the other C++ standard that most people don't know about, which is mathematical special functions. That's mine. But thank you.
Okay. I'm Peter Sommerlath from Switzerland. I joined the committee because Alistair Meredith asked me, because he was giving a presentation on the then concepts of C++ OX that never made it. And I asked interesting question, and he told me, well, these questions should be asked at the committee meetings. And I said, so what's that? And he drafted me for that. And I happened to manage to host the meeting twice in 2010 and this year in Rapperswil. That's where you get these hats. So we actually produced most of the finalization of C++ 11 in Rapperswil in 2010. And we were done with 14 already when we had the meeting this June, thanks to Herb, who was hosting it in February here in Issaquah. My contributions are minor. I'm guilty of producing the wording of the broken async. But only because I was told to do that. I have to say that. And I usually try to finish up with minor things that come up to my desk, and I see, okay, why don't we have that yet? Things like apply, things like a version of finalize with RAII. We've now have three papers in a row on RAII, and none of them suited the committee. And I think it's a little bit ping-pongish going on. It started out with four classes. I made it one. Then I got two, and it's still not right. I'm not sure how many we will end up with.
None.
Yeah. That's a bit depressing. So if you ask me what I want in a new version of the standard, is RAII support and more smart pointers, Walter. For non-owning, for whatever we need to come up with. But I have to write a paper first, and I have no idea when I'll be able to do that, to map out the landscape of which smart pointers we actually need. My dream is that in the future there will no memory leaks, no naked pointer, no naked C arrays, except where we are interfacing with other languages, because they make many things broken. So, long-term agenda. And I'm teaching C++ to my students, sorry.
I'm Stefan T. Lawade. I've been working on the STL since 2007, and I've been on the committee mailing list since just about that time, but I only started physically attending meetings in 2012. So I wasn't there at the actual meetings for any of C++11, although I was trying to implement it. But I've been dabbling in some of the work for C++14 in there. Make unique and the transparent operator functors are mine. Herb prodded me to specify make unique, but it was non-trivial to figure out exactly what form it should take. And coming up in C++17, variable templates for type traits. Building on Walter's _t, if you want to say _v for value, that's me. And a new range-based for loop is coming in 17 very likely, which I'm particularly fond of. Thank you. And I'm currently working on uniform container erasure, which is a surprisingly obnoxious thing to do in the STL. I decided we should actually do it once and for all so Scott Myers can stop teaching the erase-remove idiom. My dream is to drive Scott out of employment, but I'll never achieve it. Yeah, I guess long term I want to see ranges make it into the standard library. I don't really know how to specify them, but I'll know it when I see it. What I want to see removed is, I have a hope of seeing bind deprecated and removed. I hate bind. Every year I hate it more. Now that we have generic lambdas, there's no reason to use bind. My ultimate dream is the deprecation and removal of IO streams, facets, and locales. I want them to go away.
No. Smoking crater. That's
all. I second that.
My name is Howard Hennett. I started attending the meetings in 1998. I served as library working group chair a long time ago. It's 2005, 2010, I think. My first day on that job, John Lakos walked in the door, but you've already heard that story. I've got my fingerprints on move semantics, unique pointer, a little bit of mutex, chrono, shared mutex, condition variable any, I don't know, some other stuff probably. My biggest complaint is I don't think it's fair that I have to sit up here and Lawrence Crowell over there gets to sit down there. So I think we should force him to come up here. Are there others? Who else is out there?
Paul? What committee members are out there? Stand up, please.
Yeah, there's several committee members out there.
I'm going to have to make the stage bigger. Paul?
Yeah.
There's more space up here. you're gonna have to pay for what you've done on the committee.
I think I haven't done much.
My hope for C++17 is that it's named C++17 and not 18, 19, 20.
One correction. Howard doesn't have his fingerprints on Moose Semantics. He's Mr. Moose Semantics.
So my name is Marshall Clow. I work for Qualcomm. I'm one of the newbies on the committee. I started in 2012. There are a few little things in C++14 that I had my hand in, more in the library fundamentals technical specification, the extensions to standard search that are there with Boyer-Moore searching and Boyer-Moore Horsepool searching are mine. I'm currently leading the ranges study group. And like Stefan, I'm not sure what we're going to do with ranges, but I'm hoping that I'll know it when I see it. and I'm not really that panicked about C++17 being 17. My goal for it is it for it to be a good release with things that we full of things that we can be happy with. And that's about it.
That way.
He's got one.
My name is Chandler Carruth. I work at Google. I got into the standards committee because after C++ 11, Google was caring a lot more about the standardization of C++. There were a lot of things in 11 that didn't really work for us, especially didn't really work for our compilers, and we had to spend a lot of time fixing them, and felt that we should actually be involved, which actually provide this kind of feedback earlier in the cycle of the standard. I think probably my biggest agenda is I would like C++ to move faster to make developers' lives easier. I feel like it moves far too slow. It moves slowly for good reasons, but it still moves too slowly. And I would also like to make sure that C++ doesn't add things that developers don't need. And I don't mean necessarily features, but even as example of one of my pet peeves, I am really a huge defender of undefined behavior. I think it's a great thing. I don't want to see C++ lose undefined behavior or try and define all of the behavior, because I think that actively hurts developers.
Hi, I'm Stefanos Dutois. I started with the committee in about 2008, 2009. I was involved with a startup called RapidMind. We did data parallelism for C++, and we thought, maybe someday there's room for standardization of something like that. Maybe someday there still will be. But, we figured we'd get in early before what became 11. By the time 11 rolled around, that company was no longer around, and neither was there any impetus to standardized data parallelism in the way that we were thinking about it. But in the meantime, I took a lot of minutes, and that eventually led to me becoming secretary of the committee. Later, I became the project editor for C++ 14. It's far less glorious than you might imagine.
We know.
It's just glorious enough.
In terms of things I'd love to see in 17, I'd love to have the standard admit that two's complement arithmetic and integer representations makes sense and should just be standard. And I'd also love to see some kind of support for coroutines, whether language library or otherwise, but I think it's long overdue.
So hello, I'm Alistair Meredith. I'm the current Library Working Group Chair. And if you were around on Monday, you might have been to my session where I described how I got involved in the committee. I've been a member since about 2003. My first contribution was turning up to the first meeting. I didn't know how it worked, so I looked around for a very simple library I could write up just so I had something to show and tell. I didn't know that you didn't actually have to write your own paper just to walk through the door. But that's the origin of Standard Array. Probably my most notable contribution to C++ 11 won't show up in the standard itself. There was a lot of work going along, and I could see people were shooting in lots of different directions, but the work just didn't seem to be landing in the actual standard document itself. And that's because we didn't have anything that was tracking the status of the different papers. So we had issues lists for the library and the core group, and I figured I'll write something similar just to track the progress of where all the papers are going. And that just seemed to bring the focus, as far as I can tell, that actually got C++ 11 to land. So I think I'm actually more proud of that than any actual technical contribution I made to the language. What would I like to see in C++ 17? Anyone who knows me will believe me if I say as an empty defect list. But resolving defects is my little vice. Probably in terms of what would I like to see that's currently on the way coming through, I would really like to see a good networking library, which hopefully we're going to have a TS for that. I don't think it will land in time for 17, but I hope we'll have a technical specification, an extra piece of library that we can definitely document, get experience with, and get a good standard platform for the C++ to actually talk to all the other computers out there. This is important.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Crowell. My first meeting was in 1997, the London meeting. There's a world tour, you might have figured out by now. I guess I've had my hands in a lot of things. The first, I think I have the first approved feature for C++ 11, which was Unicode string literals. And there's been a lot since then. Defaulted and deleted functions, atomics, lambdas, I don't know, I can't remember. I'm currently the chair of the numeric study group and the editor for the array technical specification, which seems to be in somewhat limbo right now. I guess my thing about C++ is I want to make sure that in this rush to extend our capabilities, we also keep it constrained enough so that everything still works together. I mean, the great feature of the original standard library was that the iterators served as the currency between algorithms and data structures, so you could mix and match everything. I really want to make sure that we keep that capability to have a lot of flexibility in how things match up.
So I started sometime in 2007. I couldn't tell you where the heck the first meeting I attended was, but it was somewhere.
Do you have a name?
What name would you like?
The one you go by.
The one I go by. Okay. Well, I'm Paul McKinney. I mostly cause trouble with concurrency and parallelism. I guess the thing I would really like to see is some version of memory order consumed that actually is implemented and does what's needed on all CPUs. Mm-hmm. So that may be somewhat of a faint hope, but maybe we'll get there.
You guys are all in the buzzwords and stuff, so you used a couple of things that that not everybody necessarily is familiar with, so I wanted to ask you. Michael, you mentioned a national body. Can you tell us what that means?
It means my body is it's quite national. Yes, I am now also an international body. Thank you for that elevation. There's this distinction on the standard committee where at the ISO level, and I'm going to leave it to Herb to explain the difference between Insights, which is the American ANSI, was at one point American ANSI, and the ISO level. So each nation has its own standards organization. Mine is called Standards Council of Canada. Germany is called DIN. You get the picture. Each one of these effectively actually gets one vote, and they make up the ISO vote. And if you are the head of delegation for that country, you make decision on that. Well, it's not that arbitrary. You have to kind of collect data from your constituents. So in my constituent are, in fact, people from Intel, from Microsoft. Herb is, by the way, Canadian. So RIM, actually, and Tony is not here because he's busy preparing for his talk tomorrow. So your responsibility is wider than just drawing something that's out of your hat, but you try to represent your country as best as you can, even though sometimes that is somewhat limited to the people that you happen to know. In this conference, I am calling for all Canadians so that I can know more of them. In fact, I know a few of them. I hope you come to see me, because I really want to know to get to know you. Nevertheless, what it means is that in the vote, each country gets one vote. And at some point during the ratification, there's a ballot that goes out to each of these countries. They give comments back. They acknowledge whether they're going to accept the ratification or say no, or say yes with comment. And that's essentially how the process moves forward.
Okay, thank you. All right. So I'm going to start taking questions from the audience. There's mics there and there and there. I think there's three mics. Is that right? So if you have a question, go ahead. Meantime, while we're lining up, there's one other question that I have. You guys, every time somebody mentioned hosting, you guys went crazy. So what does hosting mean, and why is that such a big deal? Why does it get applause?
The one line is, somebody has to pay for 100 people to come and have meeting space for a week to argue and make a standard, and we appreciate the nations and the companies who pay the bills so that we can meet. So thank you.
Yes. Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Let's start here. Arthur?
Okay. So this is a question about move elision and copy elision.
And possibly a very historical question at that. So, for Howard and for old people. So if I make an identity function that takes some user-defined type t by ref or by value, and then returns it by value, and that's all it does, just return its parameter. And I chain this together, identity of identity of identity of identity of x. And then I compile this with maximum inlining and maximum optimizations, and I see a whole bunch of move constructors happening because they're not allowed to be elided because you can't move out of a parameter. And I know that this wording is explicitly in the standard, and I've never understood why.
You are allowed to move out of a parameter. That's pretty much why. The premise of your question is, I'm afraid, mistaken. Move elision will automatically happen from a parameter. Or did I misunderstand the question?
Well, either that or I am wrong, but there is something about parameters that makes them magic.
Oh,
for elision.
Actually, okay, the elision. Thank you, Chandler.
This is the case we were talking about in email last week.
Right.
Oh, good.
Okay. You're correct. The elision is not allowed, and I don't know a good reason for it not being allowed. Historically, it never was, not even in the first standard. And I think the reason that it was never allowed is because nobody ever figured out how to implement it. So there was no motivation to make it allowed.
However, one thing that is allowed that you taught me in the last couple of weeks, which I didn't realize was in the standard, and there it was sitting when you pointed to 12.8/31 bullet 3. I think that's actually correct.
Herb has the standard memorized, by the way.
No, it's only because you pointed me to it, is that if you pass a temporary object to a function that takes and you move from that, takes an R value reference, or it takes by value, right?
Yeah.
Takes by value, that you can actually, instead of move plus move, that compilers can, and all the major ones already do, turn that to a single move. So they do some of that, but not the specific case you're asking about. We'd like to know how to do that.
I know that, is Richard Smith here hiding somewhere? Okay, I know he's like at this conference. Anyways, he's actually been looking into move elision and why we can't do it in all cases and how we can do it in more cases, but it's still hard.
Okay. From the center mic.
Will there be a clean way to alias data instead of using memcopy?
So there's actually a paper about trying to define aliasing more carefully that's in flight. Michael's been working on it. I've been opining on it, but not really helping. But I, as far as I can tell, and I could be wrong, and Michael, you can argue with me here as much as you want. I don't see the standard actually allowing you to alias data explicitly more. I see the standard allowing you to explicitly not alias data more. And I am advocating strongly in that direction. Aliasing is bad. Don't do it. Use memcopy. And if it's slow or it doesn't like optimize away, file a bug with your compiler.
I agree with that.
I would like to point out that in many cases, memcopy, you look at it in your source code and you think procedure call. And that's not so in a lot of cases.
What I think is not self-documenting, and I think kind of ugly. If there was like an alias cast or something, it would be very explicit what was happening.
So would you be happier with a cast to a char star and a std copy? Like, is it the C-ish nature of this that disturbs you?
It's that you require a comment so that someone knows why you're doing this.
Let me put it differently. The key is that it's copied, not casted, right? Now, we can spell the copy in various more friendly ways, but once it's copied, you should know what it means, that you've taken the bytes out of the thing and put them into another thing. And I think copy is actually the most clear semantic. Now, I think it's really annoying to type the various casts required to do it with std copy, and it's a little annoying that you have to use memcopy, which is kind of an annoying API to use. I get it wrong every single time. That's why there's a clang warning about getting the arguments the wrong way. I needed that warning badly. But I don't know how to express it better than a copy.
I have a follow-up question for Chandler.
At the rear microphone, please.
Is memmove as acceptable as memcopy?
Yes.
Awesome.
All right. So it's std move.
So that means you don't have to copy.
because you just move it to itself. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chandler.
More questions.
Next.
All right, on the right microphone.
All right, this question was inspired by Scott's talk on Monday. I'm curious what the motivation is for braced initializer lists not having a type.
Core hates library. They hate them so much. I can't perfect core this. No. No, I have no idea.
There's a great reason for this. You can have curly braced lists which do not have homogeneous type. What type would that have?
Stood initializer list?
No, it's non-homogeneous. The only thing you could possibly do is a tuple, but then you're not just adding an initializer list to the standard, you're adding tuple literals, which very radically changes the nature of the language. And so if you don't want to add tuple literals, then you have to back off of the heterogeneous typing. And once you back off the heterogeneous typing, we're left without a good type to use.
Thank you.
All right, back down here, Richard?
I might be incorrect, but I think there's three major compilers, and then there's a bunch of little compilers. Do we need more compilers? Do we need less? Should the standard choose one? I just want to hear what the thoughts are. Do we need a bunch or little, or what would be best?
Herb?
I have a perfectly good one. I don't know why anybody would have Herb. So, let me just say that kind of question has been asked in the history of C++, and I think the existence of Clang and its influence on the community and on and improving the high watermark for everybody, lifting all boats, is a clear answer that we always need innovation.
And don't ask any more questions that are just causing trouble.
Hold on. I think we can do a better job of answering than that. No offense, sir. I want to point out that adding implementations of C++ is hard. I don't know that it's clear how hard. I actually doubt that it will ever happen again. And I say that because I didn't think that Clang would happen, and I still don't really know why or how it did. Okay? And I was there, and I don't know. It's unlikely that we're going to get like some like widespread diversity of implementation. Okay, just because the costs are too high. That said, diversity of implementation is good and even important. So if you ever wonder how important, you should talk to some of the core... Well played, sir.
And that's what happens when you talk to core.
Core hates library.
But no, if you talk to like if you talk to some of the compiler vendors and you'll get an interesting story, because I would often like ask Richard, like, well, why are you changing how Clang implements something? And he's like, well, I have Clang, I have GCC, I have you know EDG, and I have Microsoft. I tried compiling something on every compiler, and all three disagreed with Clang. Clang's probably wrong. They're actually voting. And so the fact that we have different and diverse implementations is really, really important, because it gives us the ability to cross-check our understanding. The more novel and diverse the implementations we have, the better off we are at understanding the language. The trick is to balance that against the incredibly high cost of having and supporting multiple implementations.
So I want to chime in on that. I've heard you say that twice now, and internally, I generally agree with Chandler, because he's a hell of a guy. on this one, I have to say that while I agree that it is an incredibly high cost, I have actually observed in my lifetime, myself alone, working on two compilers, and it seems to be my experience that every 10 years, a new compiler will come along. I don't know that, and it seems to be holding out pretty well. Maybe that's because software gets stale, and for whatever reason, you need something to revitalize. Everything else on what he said, I totally agree with, you know.
Because he's a hell of a guy.
Because he's a hell of a guy. Infinite diversity and infinite combination. Okay. That's all I have to say on that.
All right. And center mic.
Oh. And it's not necessary to have lots.
And we do have fewer major ones than we did, say, 15 years ago, because some have gone away, you know, the thing like Zortec, or like, we still have Symantec, we still have Wacom, that kind of thing, but they're very, they almost don't exist anymore in some cases. But just in general, having a handful, having several is much better than having one for the reasons Chandler said, and that has nothing to do and is not limited to compilers. It applies everywhere. In our food supply, not having biodiversity is a real danger and hazard because one virus could wipe out all crops. Let's not talk about that, or we'll be here for a while. But there are.
But then why did you bring it up?
That's one for core.
Because it's not a danger that's limited to a compiler or an operating system. It's a general idea that having several is usually a good point of redundancy. It makes things stronger.
How many standards should we have?
So
we've got a lot of them. How many do you want?
Let's take the center mic.
Okay, so I know some of you have a stake in like finance. I know some of you care about scientific computing or compilers. I'm wondering if maybe if you could raise your hand, how many of you have a stake in real-time graphics?
Oh.
We got like one wavy hand here.
Can I point out, like, by the way, the committee is like 80 people.
Okay. Okay, so this is not a representative sample. Okay, I can take that. But okay, so at least from this,
you mean like games versus like offline rendering or something?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I'm a games hobbyist, kind of.
Yeah, so I'm talking about games. I'm talking about, you know, maybe, and you know, it could be real time or offline. But anyways, my point is, I think that the game industry and other real time graphics kind of industry has a big stake in C++.
Volunteer.
Yes. Yeah.
So join the committee.
Come join the board.
Herb, where is the next meeting?
ISOCPP.org/STD. Come join.
So just to try and directly answer here, right? Like.
So yeah, my final answer really is just like, what do you think about this?
I think that we need to have game companies represented on the committee, but we like. We can't make them come and attend the meetings. I'm really serious that we would love to have game companies with representatives on the committee.
So there's another answer here, and that is that C++ can't support all of the different applications, right? Because there's just too many applications. What C++ can do is come up with good mechanisms and good abstraction facilities that allow somebody in that domain to put together really good libraries that are widely supported and highly performant. So what we really want is to understand your problem well enough to deliver mechanisms that can work not only for game developers, but let's say for flight control software or deep astronomy. We're looking for what's the core that has broad applicability.
And the best way to understand that is to have members who are game developers.
Absolutely. Please keep in mind, I mean, it. A lot of people know this, but in general, it is not well known. Nobody is paying us to do this work. Seriously, nobody on the committee is there because they get paid to be there. Most of us, I was one of them at one point, were lucky enough to have employers who sort of tolerated sending us and paying our salary while we're not doing the work we were hired to do, and paying our travel expenses and, you know, letting us go play with the standard. And to pay ISO, or their national body, the equivalent, for membership. And the costs involved vary dramatically. In some country, in the U.S., it's $1,000 a year now. I think it still is. $1,200. Thank you. It's gone up. I'm lucky. They voted me in as an emeritus member, so I don't have to pay anymore, but I pay my own travel. All right? Does anybody want to underwrite an emeritus? But... those of you who were at my talk this morning, please, we are always looking for more help. So we would like you and you and you and you every one of you to come and become active. Come, you need to learn the process. It's not hard. It won't take you very long. And then do something that you care deeply about that will benefit not only you, but as we heard, you know, the, form the basis of good abstractions. We really like the notion of better libraries. We have a vision of improving the core language so that we can write better libraries. If you do the arithmetic, let me quote you a couple of numbers. The C++ 11 and let's see, the C++ 14 standard is something on the close order of about 1,300 pages, give or take. I'm not sure if that includes the indices, and you know, but call it roughly 1,200 to 1,300 pages of standard ease. Roughly 400 of that is the core language. And the balance is the standard library. Compare the size of that standard library to, say, the Java library. It's a pittance by comparison. And I mean C++ is smaller by a large factor. We would love to see more libraries. They have to be good. We don't want to standardize stuff that's not good. But we need domain experts. We got the random header because I have colleagues who really know random numbers, world-class experts in random numbers. But if nobody was willing to do that, we still wouldn't have that. So you have expertise, you have expertise, you have expertise. We want to tap it. Please participate. That's my pitch.
I want to just add the methodology here to make sure that it helps. So the national body level is also where, if you couldn't come, for instance, and this is why, in fact, I'm soliciting Canadians. I know in Canada, Electronic Arts is there, BioVale is there. If you can come, by all means, please come. That's the best choice. But if you can come through your national body, me, or the US national body rep, or whoever's here, is another way that you can get representation. I know that there's an electronic arts STL. I've been dying to see what it is and how it compares. You know what I'm talking about. I really want to get, and that's the, I'm just trying to point out another way that you can do it if cost is an issue. I doubt it is. But let's say if it is, then I will represent you, and that's one avenue that it can happen.
Yeah. I'll point out that, you know, there's a It's easy for us to sort of get defensive about our makeup and so on. It is quite clear that we are a little top heavy with implementers, people who actually implement compilers, who actually write the libraries and so on, because obviously we have a vested interest in what goes in. If we standardize on something that is unimplementable or is going to slow down our compiler or make it non-competitive with, say, Fortran. then, you know, we will wish we were there to stop it, and so there's that. But you know, I'm always happy to see like the Bloombergs and DRWs and the Fermilabs represented in the meetings, because there are programmers, people who are actually using C++ rather than writing compilers for C++. And so it's unfortunate that, of course, it's easy for a compiler vendor to justify sending, you know, the cost of sending somebody to Spain or Switzerland for a meeting, and to pay their dues to the standards body, to the national standards body. And it's much harder for a game company, especially if it's five people, to justify that cost. But one thing that is, you know, the reach out, the outreach that we're doing here, like, I want to thank Herb specifically for things like the standard CPP website, the standardcpp.org, how was it? ISOCPP.org, that is really intending to try and reach out to, you know, people who may not be able to be official members of the committee, but have something to contribute for what is a real user need. And what did we do that is making life more difficult for you that we can smooth, you know, where are the rough edges that we could smooth out?
Yeah, I mean, I'm here because, you know, users are underrepresented on the committee, and, you know, financial industry, you know, we felt are really underrepresented. That's why I'm here. If you feel your community is underrepresented, come to a meeting. I mean, like any good drug, the first one's free.
Okay, all right.
So I just wanted to make a point here that that may have gotten lost in this whole thing. We're talking about libraries and getting libraries into the standard, and I want to remind everybody that the output of the standards committee is not software. The output of the standards committee is a standard, which is a specification. So there's not really an idea of getting your library into the standard. It's getting a description, a specification of a library you use into the standard, which then all the compiler and standard library vendors will provide implementations of for their user base.
All right. Let's get a question at this end here.
Hi. So I hear there is a proposal to standardize the order of evaluation of arguments. So I kind of wanted to hear you guys respond to that. But before I let you do that, I wanted to mention that when I was basically essentially porting Clang to Windows and I want it to be compatible with the Visual C++ compiler, I found that I actually had to change the order of evaluation of arguments from left to right, which some people think is perhaps logical, to right to left, so that I could match the order of destruction that happens in the callee. I don't know if this is an issue that matters to anyone.
Well, since you mentioned Visual
C++. I'm sorry, we have to start at this end.
actually, one thing.
That's audience.
The only
left.
Way to do this is to evaluate them in parallel.
Now, but interestingly,
we'll all talk at the same time,
interestingly,
in other words.
Yeah. So I didn't know we were in SG1.
So you're matching Visual C++'s order of the function argument evaluation. Which one?
Yes, x86 and x86-64.
Not the
other. Yes, you're right. ARM,
because ARM. Because ARM is left to right, and x86 is right to left. Yeah, so we know that we have to change something if we standardize this, but frankly, I'm one of those who think that the right answer is probably to partially specify it, because it turns out you don't have to nail down everything. Gabby Dos-Reis in particular convinced me of that. You need to nail down like three or four of them to get rid of essentially all the problem cases I've ever seen. Which basically means, I can tell you them real quick. Assignment expressions, so B equals A, that includes compound assignment, B plus equals A. Evaluate A before B, so right to left. Member expressions, A dot B, A arrow B, evaluate A before B. And then for function parameter lists, function call of A comma B comma C, do A comma B comma C. If you do those, I think you eliminate all the surprises, but we still have to see if that's non-controversial.
I was going to go ahead and say, I'm opposed to this because I don't think that particularly for parameter lists, for argument lists and function calls, I think that code which relies on the order of evaluation is bad code. At an abstract level, it's not something that you should be relying on. It doesn't yield like robust and easily understandable code. And so I would rather not actually say what the order is, because once we do, then it is a totally valid way to write code. I don't want to endorse that.
We're here.
So one answer to this problem is getting your compiler vendor in validation mode to randomly choose which order it's going to do on each compilation. And then you will quickly identify where your problems are.
Here, here.
All right. I want to make a change to the format that I've been doing here. I want everyone who asks a question to say their name first, because I kind of want to. Can you say your name?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Reed Kleckner. I work for Google. I work on the Clang C++ compiler.
Okay. Thank you very much. Can you say your name and
ask
this question?
Yes, my name is Ho Li. I work for a Susquehanna International Group, which is a financial firm based in Bala Cynwyd, Pennsylvania, which is right outside Philadelphia. I want to start my question by saying that I really like the fact that I don't have to, like, when I can put two right angle brackets together without needing a space in between.
All right.
So and then recently I discovered that I actually need a space if the right angle bracket is followed by an assignment. So I wonder if this is something the committee has considered and then decided that the space is necessary, or is it going to become optional in the future?
It's too bad you're not Canadian.
Would you like to change allegiance?
Yeah, if you'd renounce your citizenship, I'm pretty sure that Michael could fix that for you.
No, seriously, we should explain the issue.
In a word?
I actually didn't know that was messed up. What's funny is that they fix things without really advertising it before. Some of you might know that if you have a template like vector of something, and then you want to explicitly qualify the thing inside, but you want to be super paranoid, and you're like double colon std double colon blah. And in 98, if you didn't put a space there, you said angle bracket colon, that was a digraph. And that turned into a square bracket, and then it blows up. And they fixed that in the grammar. There's a disambiguation rule, and I didn't know they did that. but apparently, like, nobody knew about right shift equal. So if you could send a committee member just like a mail, or your compiler vendor.
Both, like, the greater equal and the right shift assignment.
Okay.
So this is the popular...
Left equal?
Yeah.
Really? There's a whole bunch of them. Code?
Yeah. This is called the trigraph problem. Okay.
No, but question is trigraph. If it's angle equal or equal angle whatever.
It's token disambiguation.
It's still token.
Right? Yes. I just want to know what valid code could involve that.
Remove the trigraphs?
Yes. Yeah, there is. And in fact, it's already been voted on. And
what was the vote?
The vote is the vote was largely positive with about 5 people going against. I was one of those people. I was strongly negative. And I'll explain. I might as well explain my position here because I actually wrote about it in my blog just a couple of days ago, which is now on isocpp.org, because this is a big thing for my company. IBM has EBCDIC as largely where it gets a lot of its money. EBCDIC is an important part of the community. The removal of trigraph harms EBCDIC because in EBCDIC, on certain code pages, you cannot get to those code pages unless you go through trigraphs. And every header file on EBCDIC starts out with a trigraph neutral way of getting to it until it figures out what code page you're on. And then it sets, and then now you can go to some ASCII or EBCDIC world. Now here's the thing. In the ASCII world, this is surprising. And I totally understand that. I have to confess, I am not an EBCDIC person. I have confessed to the committee that I know very little about it other than what I have learned from my colleagues. In the ASCII world, when you have a string and you have these kind of weird, funny combinations in it, they get surprisingly replaced. People go, what the hell? And then they go, oh, it's a trigraph. I gotta just go turn off trigraphs. There's now currently a proposal to have trigraph be removed from the standard, okay? So that in the next standard, it won't bother the ASCII world anymore. Now my official position is from IBM is that this is a concern for us. It's a serious concern because it invalidates portability for our segment of users. I am going to be revealing, I'm going to discuss this at the next standard meeting of what I've been instructed to say from IBM. So I'm going to hold that in suspense because I don't want to hold up this whole discussion because there's a lot of emotional discussion around this. Okay? I myself... I'm very much an ASCII boy myself, I have to confess. But I do understand IBM's concern, and it's my job to represent them fairly as much as I can, because number one, I am actually employed by IBM. But number two, being a Canadian, they are an important constituent of mine. So if you want to know the whole story and know how it goes, so I've been given a kind of a token by Biana to say, come back and show us how important it is, how many people use it, how does it stand. I've been given this task. And I've done that job, and I'm going to write a paper to reveal what I think and where I think the committee should go about that. Okay, I don't want to take up the committee time arguing about it because this is one of those fairly controversial positions. There's a number of people here online who's going to feel want to go a certain way, and if we start discussing this, we could be here till tomorrow morning.
In one sentence, this is an excellent example of the kinds of considerations with any proposal. Who is it going to break? How can we mitigate that breakage? What's the cost? What's the benefit? And you find out things like this and who you really might be affecting.
For your original greater equal issue, it actually occurs to me that this is a good example. If somebody's like, oh yeah, I want a library for real-time graphics or something, somebody needs to write such a proposal, drive it, and if the committee doesn't have that expertise, well, we need people, and we've talked about that. But if you're like, okay, there's like this one specific thing that's just killing us, this doesn't parse, or wow, reverse iterator doesn't actually work, or whatever. You've essentially found a bug or what you think is a bad design
point in the standard. There's a much easier way to deal with that. It's called a core issue or a library issue, and it's a bug in the standard. To report those, you don't need to send somebody to the committee. You just need to write up exactly what you think is wrong, ideally with a proposed resolution if you're capable of writing that standard ease, or just mention the direction you'd like to see it resolved, and then send it to the person in charge of maintaining core and library issues. Alistair, are you still on the hook for... No, it's Dan. You just send it to LWG chair.
Yeah, so yes. We've got a variety of people can access that account in order to get it onto the list.
Yeah.
So see isoccpp.org/std. One of them is how to submit a proposal or how to submit
a
defect report,
issues?
And it'll tell you.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And that's a great example of something that can be resolved in much faster iteration than like write a whole paper and then get it defended and all that.
And right. if...
Yes.
Thank you.
If your issue is editorial, meaning it has no actual bearing on the standard, but just something is either wrong or poorly formatted or something like that, you can do even better than that. You can go to GitHub at github.com/C++/draft. You can find the entire source of the standards draft, and you can submit a pull request. And people have started doing this, which is really great. It's been a lot of fun to see that accelerate. And if you submit a well-done pull request and it doesn't break the build of the standard, which is currently in LaTeX, which is a bit cumbersome, but it's fine, your chances of it getting accepted, if it truly is an editorial issue, are pretty high. So,
And I do...
Yes, so again, editorial is... something that doesn't change the bearing, the actual meaning of the standard. It's anything inside of a note or a comment. You'll see these, note or an example, note or example sections. And it's also things that do have a meaning on the standard, but where you can point back to the standards paper that was supposed, the paper that was supposed to be applied and say, hey, this paper said make this change, but that change is missing from the standard. That would also qualify as an editorial issue.
And so I just want to point out that this is the man who is responsible for the standard being open source, essentially, and on GitHub, and that you can do pull requests on the standard. Who knew? Thank you very much.
All right. So on the right,
wait, you can also create a fork of the standard and.
Okay, Pablo, we don't want you to say anything more. On the right, can you say your name and ask your question, please?
Okay, hi, I'm Carl. I'm the PM for the Visual C++ front end. Usually the bearer of bad news. My question is this. Recently, there's been a bunch of what people call systems languages, new ones. For example, outside, I saw they were selling a book about D, which I found was weird.
I don't think that's a new one.
Yeah, it's been around. Okay, well, relatively new. And, of course, there's Mozilla's Rust. And, of course, also recently, there's been new Ada and new Fortran standards out. And of course, there's languages in general, not just systems languages, that have many nice ideas. I'm just wondering, when you guys come up with your designs for new language features, do you guys try to do it in isolation? Or what is your general attitude towards taking ideas from other languages and putting them into C++? Or even vice versa, taking something C++ has and say, you know what, I'm going to moonlight as a, contributor to D, and then put stuff in there that I like from C++.
So despite all evidence to the contrary, reality to the contrary, and people's desires to the contrary, it is not actually the committee's job to design anything. Ooh. And that's a good thing, because have you seen Design by Committee? So technically speaking, as a committee, we're not in the business of designing things. Figuring out what to change in C++. What we do is we take papers from individuals who are proposing a change and evaluate them as a committee. And now, if you're asking what we as individuals do when we're proposing papers, because many of the people who are on the committee also are the authors of papers, that's a slightly different question. But I just want to make it really clear that the committee really shouldn't be doing design.
Okay.
And to your actual original question, yes, a number of papers do come from people with experience with other languages that find a feature very useful in another language and propose it sometimes, you know, almost exactly in the same form as from the other language, often mutated into a more C++-like way of expressing the same idea. But yes, people often do get their inspirations from the other languages.
So there's an important point about that sometimes get missed from other languages, and that is C++ has destructors, and they have pretty deep implications. So a feature that you find useful in another language, sure, let's take a look at it, but there's been more than one feature that is foundered on destructors because it was designed in a context where destructors didn't exist. And so a lot of the work, like closures, right? They've been around for decades. It took a while to get them into C++ because we had several communities of interest that used closures in different ways. We needed something that would handle both communities in the context of C++. That takes original work. It's not just snarfing the idea from another language.
Our job, as I see it, I mean, I don't speak for the committee. No one here speaks for the committee. There is no voice to the committee. We're really all individuals. Is that we want to make sure we have one coherent language as best we can with lots of constraints. You know, backwards compatibility is a huge constraint. Stability. We're trying to make sure everything fits together. So we like inspiration from other languages. You know, we like learning new things and, you know, better ways to solve problems. And, you know, bring them, you know. Figure out ways that they can fit into the language to make the language better.
Okay. Arthur, can you say your name and ask your question, please?
My name is Arthur O'Dwyer. So I figure I owe it to the audience of my talk on Tuesday to ask about three-way comparison, less than, equal that, equal to, or greater than, a la strcomp. Std string has a compare method. Tuple, to my knowledge, does not, and there's no templated version that works for any type. Has this been tried and found wanting, or has this not been proposed ever?
I'll try to stick to one-line answers. One-sentence answer, Bjarne, there was a paper proposed in Rapperswil, and Bjarne liked the idea and hated the actual proposal, essentially, enough that he is bringing a proposal for general comparison for equality and ordering comparison for all types in our next meeting in Urbana. I see the draft. Right. Looks really good.
So I'm going to interrupt you with moderator's
Maybe we
privilege.
Can invent computed go to again.
I'm going to ask a question. Are you suggesting that a good strategy of getting the feature you want is to write up a paper that would implement it in an awful way, so that somebody else has to come back and say, no, this is how you really want to do it.
So, as a long-term committee member, every first proposal you write up is a bad way.
Oh, okay.
Right. The reason we have a committee is so everybody can figure out what's wrong with your proposal. Okay. So don't get too hung up on your first proposal. Just focus on solving the problem and things will work out.
I just want to point out that is almost universally true. There have been a couple notable exceptions. The STL over there managed to get one through without any modifications on his first draft.
Ooh. Give a very specific example of, you know, getting on board with a bad paper to shoot it down. Michael had a paper proposing inheriting constructors for C++11, and I hated it. I thought there was a completely misdesigned feature. So I jumped on board with Michael to keep shooting it down and shooting it down. And he kept fixing it until eventually I went, suddenly I have a feature I like now, because he's fixed all the issues that I had there. Michael might not like being on the hook for actually having got this feature in, but...
Those damn Canadians.
Blame Canada.
It works.
One comment. If you propose something, make sure that you specify make the specification sound, but you also have a marketing story. When you had dinner tonight, that was one of the issues I put on the table. Some people write very good specifications, but fail to do the marketing pitch. And that's important to convince the committee, because we might be bright collectively in the room, but as individuals, we have limited brain capacity. And that makes it hard to judge and understand everything. We cannot understand everything. But having a good marketing position and maybe makes it easier to get supporters, especially if you're not personally there at the committee to, let's say, nudge the others and give them a kick and tell them that what you did is great. So it's not only technique, it's also marketing.
Okay. And if I may, I'd like to point out that there are home runs that are hit by people who are not officially part of the committee. Recently, in time for C++ 14, a young fellow sent me an email privately. He had looked at some work that I had done that made it into the standard already, and he said, you know, you didn't really do this equivalent work in this other part of the library. So I wrote back and I said, yeah, you're right. Why don't you write a paper? And he said, how do I go about it? And I pointed him to the website. And he said, yeah, here's a draft. Would you mind looking at it? And I did. And I said, yeah, you need a little better introduction. And it would be nice if you did a survey of the library to see if there are other areas. And maybe there's a guideline you could propose and so forth. And over a period of about 2.5 months, he redrafted his paper. He submitted it. But he said, I can't come to a meeting. I said, well, you know, I'm familiar with it. Would you like me to shepherd it through the committee for you? He said, yeah, please. And I did that. And I said ahead of time to him, just be prepared. You know, it's likely, you know, my opinion is that it's a well-done paper. I think it's going to go through. But it's probably going to need to be revised maybe 1, 2, 3 times. This is not at all uncommon. I shepherded through the committee. It got into C++14 in one meeting. No revisions. It is doable. Home runs do happen. You don't have to be a member to have it happen. Please participate.
What's the feature? In addition to underscore T and, sorry,
it's the use of, I put in the underscore T only in type traits, but I didn't look outside type traits. So tuples, there's an underscore T opportunity, he got that in, but he surveyed the entire library to make sure we didn't miss any others. And along the way he said, now that we have this, we can also fix up the wording in a couple of other places. And by the way, here's the guideline for when we should be introducing an underscore T. And oh, by the way, here's another guideline I thought about, but it's really not as good as here's why not. I mean, it was a home run paper. Everybody who looked at it carefully said, this is the kind of paper we want to see more of. First time at bat, he hit a home run. I've been telling him, what's your next paper? What's your next paper? You can do it. You can.
I believe he may be in the room here tonight.
Is Michael here?
Michael Park?
Michael Park, are you here?
He's at the conference. I saw him. I talked to him today.
Cool. I want to point out something that's been kind of hinted at, or two things here. One is the idea is more, for the first paper, the idea is more important than the technical specification. In fact, it's often better to describe the idea without the details for initial feedback from the committee, knowing we can't pass a proposal that doesn't have formal wording, and therefore you won't be disappointed if you leave the formal wording out. Of course, if you have like a working implementation or something, that's really important for us to know, because things with working implementations have a much better chance of going through. But there's two things about that. One is, as Walter has mentioned, if you find a champion on the committee, it really, really, really helps. And one way to get a champion on the committee is to directly address one of us, you know, if you happen to know the name and email address of somebody who's on the committee. If you don't, or you don't remember us, then sending in a paper that has rationale and so on, that is well written, has the marketing that Peter mentioned, such that somebody can get excited about it, may find you a champion that will then write to you and say, we really liked your idea, I want to work with you on actually getting it going.
And go to isoccpp.org. In the standardization section, there's how to submit a proposal. One of the initial steps is the SCD-proposals discussion list, which is committee members and others, that's a great place to float the initial proposal without even coming to a meeting to get initial feedback of the kind that Walter gave. It's been a very fertile ground that people should be using more.
All right. Titus, can you say your name and your question?
I'm Titus Winters with Google. I've talked to a few of you, maybe you want my talk. It may not come as a huge surprise that I am interested in the trailing edge and how to un-engineer things. I suspect there may have been mistakes or things that you would like to undo. If the language continues to flourish in the ways that it's going, it's hard to imagine that it won't be around in 25 years. What do you have to undo, and how do you start undoing if you don't want to be embarrassed in 25 years?
C. So the same thing.
How?
I. Nuclear weapons.
We have atomics.
I'm trying with auto pointer. First, you put in a replacement that is superior and has all the functionality of the old thing, and has bait to get people to switch to it. Deprecate it. And I didn't say this when I introduced myself, but I guess the one thing I might hope for in C++17 is to remove auto pointer. And as an example.
So one of the things I think we need to get better at that we've not had a good history at is actually removing things once we've deprecated them. I'm to blame for actually managing to remove the implicit conversion of a string literal to a char star without the const qualification that was deprecated in 98, finally came out in 2011. The library is even more conservative about this. We have type defs in the IOStreams components that were deprecated when they were present in 98, and we're not taking out these aliases to other things that are documented only in the deprecation annex and have only ever lived there. So how we can proceed about this, I don't know. This is a problem that we're going to have to wrestle with more as the standard grows and more features become deprecated as we have better ways to do things.
I mean, it's hard because you're breaking something that's working that, you know, we told people they could use. But, you know, my personal belief and, you know, is that, you know, we can't make the language better just by adding to it. We've got to start taking some of the stuff away.
I was surprised early on being part of the committee to find out how little was deprecated at the time and how much discussion there was every time the deprecation or removal of a feature would come up. But it was promising to see a couple things actually get deprecated that may seem like a snail's pace from the outside, but it's really just the start of a ball getting rolling. You've heard here already, there's lots of support for taking things out. It's always a tough battle, but I actually feel like there's very slowly some momentum growing in that direction, and I'm hopeful we'll see more of it in the next couple of years.
Please keep in mind, we did one thing already that turns out to be huge. We repurposed auto. That was not uncontroversial.
Yeah. Well,
but we did a large survey. We looked at a lot of million lines of code to see how common was the old semantics for auto before we even considered repurposing it. And that was a tough decision, but we decided, you know, it was worth it, and I think it has been worth it. But there's one other avenue that's even harder. There is a channel for deprecating something and putting in a replacement, yes. But what if what we put in is wrong? How can we ever fix it? And my poster child is std max. It's wrong. Min is right. Max is wrong. It picks the wrong tiebreaker on equals. Alex Stepanov proposed it that way, and he's embarrassed by it. He said that publicly. It's wrong. We have algorithms that throw away useful information by failing to return it. It's a mistake. How do we fix it? I'm not sure that I know a good way forward, but there are going to be some big changes coming. Sooner or later, we're going to get concepts not just in a technical specification. We're going to get it into the core language. And that's going to have a huge ripple effect on the library. How do we do that? I'm not sure I know the answer to that question. And I would, you know, love to have feedback from a lot of people so that I know how to think about this. But that's a great question, and it's a hard one. It really is. Thank you.
So, all right. Just from a I like doing these sorts of things perspective, I argue we can build a tool to migrate people from the old thing to the new thing, and then the argument changes.
So just to update, just to let you know, of course, we have made good progress, and I think it will happen. Export was removed. I deprecate it. Register.
Well, yes, we can build tools, but it depends on the industry. My previous industry was gambling, and every time we submitted a change, we had to pay money to a lab for slot machines. So it's really hard to, you know, rationalize paying, you know, what ended up being, you know, it could be millions of dollars.
Right.
Because the language changed. Right. And it's really hard. That's why these are really hard problems. We need the tooling. I mean, I agree, and I want to go forward, but it's just really hard.
I have a friend who works in a company that makes medical instruments. Yeah, and every change requires a recertification, which is on the order of five figures.
I would assume every time they use a new compiler and a new language release, that would also be the case.
Yeah, every time they release anything new, which they don't do without a darn good reason.
Right.
I think the point is...
And I just wanted to point out that we did actually introduce a breaking change in C++ 14. We removed stud gets.
Very small
change.
I think you can also batch things. So I just wanted to try and... I gave a flippant answer to start off with, but I wanted to give a credible answer here. I will give my personal opinion in what I think would be good, and it's somewhat more radical. I think that all of the things that are being described here and the things that are actually happening are good things, and I think they're probably the best things that the committee can do right now. But I also think that there is a need to think further out into the future than we are currently doing. And I don't know that the committee is the right place to do that, but it's something that I'm personally trying to do, because I do not think there is, or I am worried that there is not a viable incremental path to actually removing the things we need to remove and adding the things we need to add to actually arrive at a place we will enjoy being at in 20 years or in 40 years. I think that it's going to be very hard and maybe impossible to do that incrementally. A colleague of mine, although I don't really get to work with him very often, is often cited as having a very radical position. He actually believes that the best way to improve a large software system that is bad is to burn it to the ground and to build a new one. This would be Rob Pike. And he has a point. I mean, I don't know that he's right always, and certainly like the costs are kind of astronomically high, but he does have a good point that it is extremely hard to iterate past certain points, and the larger a system gets, the more overconstrained it gets, the harder it is to iterate. And the standard is kind of the poster child for being overconstrained, painted into a corner, and without the ability to iterate. And so I actually worry how we can, you know, do something productive when we are so constrained at every turn.
I think all of these, I'm known to be an optimist, I think that's a good thing. I think all of these problems are real. I also think that having a major breaking change at some point to the standard library or something is also possible. Those things have been talked about. I actually think that we have existence proof that none of these are important, really, or insurmountable problems. The pace of standardization has accelerated. C++ 11 and 14 are simpler languages. We have removed features from the language. C++ 11 and 14 feel like new languages compared to C++ 98. They're already better, and we're delivering features faster. So actually, I don't think we have evidence. I think we have the opposite evidence that the iteration is actually happening faster and things are getting simpler. But maybe it's just me.
Thank you.
All right. I think we're at time now, or very, very close to it. Certainly not enough time to answer another one of the questions that we've been getting all night. You talked about isoccpp.org. Is that the best way for someone to find out anything about the committee? How to submit a bug, how to submit a proposal, how to attend meetings?
And that's just the standardization tab.
Okay. Yeah.
John, can we try and like power through some questions? Like 5-word answers, no more.
All right. On the right then. Say your name first.
I'm Michael. I work for Microsoft. First of all, thank you so much for adding move semantics to C++ 11. It's immensely useful feature. I wanted to ask about two pain points, at least two things I and many other people perceive as pain points. First, the content of initializer list is not movable from. And second, there is a requirement for properly implementing move semantics is that the moved from object must be left in an unspecified but like valid state. There are legitimate like types for which there is no meaningful kind of default state. And it is not clear what to do with them. And I even learned that people sometimes tend to delete the move semantics from their classes in order not to deal with this issue, which I find embarrassing.
Five words. It's right thing to do.
I think I can address both of those pretty quickly. So,
five words. You got five words.
Initializer lists are ROMable, and so they can't be modified. Moved from objects only have to react to things for which they have no for methods that have no preconditions. So if you want to put a moved from flag in your class that asserts every time it gets called, you know, except for assignment or destruction, that's great. Go for it. There's no problem doing that.
Okay, say your name.
Mike Gibson, Dish Digital. I'm just curious. I've been sort of following the reflection proposals that have gone around. I just want to comment on where folks think that is.
Progressing. 5 words, 4 questions.
Reflection, get better.
How about the module proposal?
Progressing.
What will be in 17?
There are at least two.
Go ahead, say your name.
Andy Weber from SIG. I don't know if I can do it in 5 words. Given restrict, why not alias cast?
Working on it.
Restrict is broken.
Really? F no strict aliasing, bad.
Help! This great idea, Chandler.
Okay.
Brian Budge, Google. Static initialization order.
Wait for modules.
Fiasco.
Ryan Ruzich, BAE Systems, C++ standard ABI.
Working on it. Looking fairly good.
Killing it.
Paul Robinson, Sony. In the opinion of at least one compiler, the definition of C++ 11 has changed since it came out. Is that your intent?
That happens with a defect report.
Bugs got fixed.
Okay.
Burkhardt, Daniel, Omicron. When are concepts coming?
Bjarne is not here.
Not soon enough for some people?
Okay.
Hopefully next meeting.
Okay.
Okay, I want to thank everyone, particularly the panel, for coming here tonight and putting up with being grilled. And thank you all for your questions and your patience and your understanding. And thank you all for being here. Thank you very much.